Hello to all our listeners and welcome to NESG Radio. Today is International Youth Day and this year's theme is From Clicks to Progress, Youth Digital Pathways for Sustainable Development. International Youth Day 2024 centers on the theme From Clicks to Progress, Youth Digital Pathways for Sustainable Development, highlighting the transformative power of digital tools and technology in empowering youth to drive sustainable development. This podcast explores how digital innovation can provide opportunities for young people to contribute to and lead sustainable development initiatives. I am your host, Hasina Bello Aliyu, and I am the facilitator for the Community of Practice on Youth at the NESG. With me today, I have three eminent guests who are all seasoned professionals and experts in their fields despite their youthful ages. My first guest today is Nasir Yamama, who is the Senior Special Assistant to the President on Innovation. Nasir brings a wealth of expertise in technology, entrepreneurship, and development. He has been recognized with the prestigious Queen's Young Leaders Medal by Her Majesty the Queen Elizabeth II and honored with the Nigerian National Award as member of the Order of the Niger. In his current capacity, Nasir is dedicated to harnessing innovation and technical acumen to shape policy development and implementation strategies that yield enduring societal impact. My second guest is Saad Kamaldeen. Saad has 10 years of experience working on implementing public and private sector projects in the energy, food, water nexus. His expertise covers project management, procurement, project finance, and decentralized renewable energy systems. He is trained in the UK on information technology and advisory. His latest roles are targeted at ensuring sustainable energy access for all, where he has facilitated the deployment of over $30 million towards infrastructure projects. And last but not least, we have Comfort Onyaga, who is the CEO of Izanu Africa. Comfort is a multi-dimensional professional and social innovator passionate about contributing to the journey to self-reliance for developing economies. Her early career interest has focused on leveraging public and private resources to address systemic constraints inhibiting sustainable development through policy advocacy, while driving inclusive economic growth through social interventions funded by international and local investors and donors. With a robust market systems development background, Comfort has demonstrated her ability to expedite impact by strategically deploying innovative solutions that bridge the gap between theory and practice. Her exposure to the devastating impacts of climate change on livelihoods and food security fueled her interest in demystifying the complexities of the food system to develop and implement innovative and sustainable solutions to what she calls the trilemma of food insecurity. So welcome, my guests. Let's move straight into the discussion. I will throw out questions to our specific speakers, but please, if you have anything you wish to contribute to any of the questions, go ahead and let's have a lively discussion. So my first question I would like to ask Nasir, how has digital innovation in various sectors created new opportunities for youth, and what are the key lessons from these experiences? Over to you, Nasir.
Thanks very much, Hasina. I'm delighted to be here. I think as far as digital innovation and digitalization is concerned, it's been a really, you know, great opportunity for the whole world. You know, we've seen the rise of so many things ranging from financial technology to education technology solutions that have been transformational for many societies. And I think Nigeria is no different. Young people have been at the forefront of, you know, digital innovation, as you very well know. The biggest unicorns in Africa are all, you know, technology companies, mostly from Nigeria. And if you look at, you know, the current sort of push towards digital learning, you see a lot of Nigerians, you know, learning things across the globe through multiple content. So I think the opportunity question is pretty much self-evident in what a lot of young people today make of the digital world. And this goes beyond functional things like education, finance, but also entertainment. I feel there has been a rise which has led into almost an explosion of buried talent, since, the early 2000s, and regarding lessons, I feel there are so many lessons indeed that other sectors could borrow or, as particularly in government from the policy angle, we could borrow from the digital to apply in order to, accelerate and fast track innovation in the places. This ranges from the kind of open and very democratic nature of digital technologies where, almost everyone can have a voice, can play a role. Also, I'm pretty sure, we could also learn a lot in terms of availing, resources where, they can be transformational for people. Digital technology have proven that, once you sort of open the way, you'll see a lot of great things happening. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Comfort, if I can come to you. What impact have digital tools had on gender equality initiatives, especially in terms of empowering young women?
Okay, thank you very much. I would like to start by saying that I'm super excited for the era that we find ourselves right now, where through digital tools, we've been able to achieve a whole lot. And specifically in bridging the gender inequality gap. So the narrative has changed a great deal because digital tool has impacted gender inequality initiative in a phenomenal way. To start with, literacy and access to education, we realize today that a lot of women, for instance, young women who are not able to even afford access to digital literacy, back in the days, beyond digital literacy, back in the days, you hear stories of women who dropped out of education or in families where you hear about families where there is a priority that is given to the boy or the boy child to go to school, but the girl, they feel like if the boys are funded to go to school, they'll come back and take care of their family. But now the narrative is changing. Through digital technology, women are able to gain access to education from different platforms such as Coursera and even online programs. And even with the disruption that the COVID-19 pandemic ushered us into, we have more women going into programs leveraging digital tools to acquire knowledge that is able to help them sharpen their skills. And then in terms of community building, through digital technology as well, there's a lot of social network and communities among women where professionals can share experiences that other women within the communities are able to leverage to drive their businesses. And then on the economic empowerment side of the narrative, most women who ordinarily would not have the resources to set up businesses are able to leverage digital technology to drive their businesses. We have more female content creators and also women who are leveraging even as simple as WhatsApp to drive their businesses through the WhatsApp business, and then social media as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Comfort. And if I can come back to you, Nasser, and just quickly to pick up on a comment you made in your opening remarks. You mentioned how digital tools have a way of democratizing access. Do you think in societies where there is a large disparity between the haves and the have not, is that still the case? And how you ensure that this digital democracy is very much enhanced in societies with this large wealth disparity?
Certainly digital divide is a thing, you know, and even in other, you know, areas of the economy or technology, you kind of always have, you know, these kind of situations where, you know, there's a divide due to, you know, economic positions or, you know, other factors of society, you know, that are not necessarily dependent or based on the technology in question, you know. However, deliberate efforts have to be made in order to bridge these divides and gaps. And I believe that the opportunity with digital technologies is so enormous that we cannot overlook, you know, the need to bridge these gaps where they exist. Sometimes they may be infrastructural, and I think sometimes they may be more, you know, societal, as Comfort has so, you know, eloquently told us how, you know, women suffer the brunt of this in some cases. But it's not just women, and sometimes it's older people. I know this is International Youth Day, but there's a whole you know, campaign to include older people, because, you know, we sometimes forget that most young people are digital natives, you know. This is kind of second nature to most of us. But beyond that, there's a big issue around access. And, you know, it's not so democratic when only a small, you know, a fragment of the population have access to the solutions or to the, you know, network, so to say. But luckily for us, you know, with the very high proliferation of mobile telephony in Nigeria, that's not so much of a concern. But there are other concerns, you know, like power, like, you know, broadband, like many of the integral things that make digital innovation and digital connectivity happen, you know, sometimes in most of Africa, they are a challenge. However, I think Nigeria is lucky again that, you know, we have a leadership that understands that, that is investing heavily in making sure that digital technologies become even more pervasive, knowing very well that bridging this gap, this divide, will create, you know, a massive, you know, economic boom, but also, you know, societal progress as a whole. Thank you.
That's a great point you make, Nasser, about the digital divide when it comes to age. I think a lot of times, most of the issues that are talked about when it comes to digital divides are normally financial considerations, and as you said, things like access through internet services and power. And the issue of older people having this less access and less knowledge when it comes to technology is something that is rarely discussed. Come back to you, Comfort, and discussing gender equality and digital empowerment. What challenges do young women face in accessing digital tools and platforms, and how could these barriers be overcome? And how can digital initiatives be designed to ensure inclusivity and address the needs of marginalized groups, including women, girls, and as Nasser pointed out, older people?
So in terms of the challenges women face, I would start by saying access to finance. So women are not able to have access digital technology that will enable them access those digital tools that are available to all to use. So a lot of women are faced with contending needs and priorities that may actually limit their ability to afford these digital tools. So for instance, women are faced with the priorities of young women, especially the ones who are married, and even some single women as well who are running their businesses. So they are faced with priorities such as either, you know, going to school or investing in digital technology to enable them access other opportunities. So in a situation whereby they have limited resources, so they may actually have no choice than to sacrifice their to more like an opportunity. I mean, they are faced with that opportunity cost, and they will now forego the decision. They will let go of their decision to invest in digital tools and opt for education or other contending needs. So in terms of designing interventions that can address this digital divide, again, I would make reference to a particular intervention we had within the southern region of Nigeria a couple of months or years ago. That was last year, actually. We had an intervention for young people on digital literacy within a communities in within certain communities in Rivers State, and we realized that most of the participants were male. We had more male folks within the youth age than female. So most of the women, because of the responsibilities in the home front, they were not even able to make themselves available to participate in such intervention that was designed for young people. I think that when states or organizations or even the government, you know, design intervention, they have to take several factors into consideration. One, the fact that such intervention should be scheduled, let's say it's a digital literacy program, should be scheduled at a particular point in time when the women will be available. So for instance, it could be in the afternoon or in the evening, because women are actually faced with responsibility that makes them stay at home. So at the end of the day, you realize that if you design a digital literacy intervention for young people or for young people within a community, it's difficult to have a lot of women participate, because at certain point, at certain time of the day, the women are not able to come out to participate in such programs because they have responsibility at home that demands their attention. So as such, it makes it really difficult, even if they are interested. And then more so, a lot of women do not have access to digital technology. So if the government is designing an intervention that is targeted at young people, male and female, what they can do is to ensure that they provide digital tools to enable participants to be able to access these tools or use these tools to acquire the skills that is required for them to be able to leverage opportunities within the digital ecosystem.
Thank you.
Thank you. Comfort, and I think the point is well noted that aside from affordability constraints, there's also time constraints, because it's always assumed that women have other priorities that that they need to prioritize over certain other aspects, and home and family are normally the main issues that women are made to believe should be the priorities over everything else. If I can come to you, Saad, and continuing the discussion around education and digital skills, I hope you can hear me. How can educational institutions better integrate digital skills into their curricula to prepare students for the digital economy?
Absolutely. That's a very good question, Hassana. I think we need Nigeria to start with digital education very early. At the moment, one of the only areas that we see mandatory use of digital tools for education is with the JAMB. But I would say even from the primary school level, we need to start exposing children and youth so that they are well aware and familiar with the use of computers to even start with. Because your basic computer is your window into the digital world. And the sooner you get acquainted to it and get confident with it, the more you can understand the limitless possibilities that exist with it. So I would say fundamentally, we need to have more facilities that encourage and welcome pupils of all ages to utilize digital tools. I'm aware that currently the federal government are trying to set up digital hubs within key universities. And I think that's a very good initiative, but I think we need to see more of that, in which more similar facilities that encourages young minds to explore the use of computers. And even beyond just the four corners of educational institutions. Similarly, in the UK, we need to have radio programs that, I can remember in the UK, there was this Raspberry Pi that was provided by BBC One, and that Raspberry Pi was given to homes, people at home, and every day they could tune to the radio channel and get new skills that they can do on the Raspberry Pi. And that made it very and welcoming to people that are not in educational institutions. So I think we need to have similar tools within our economy that promote even people that are not necessarily in the four corners of educational institutions to come into the digital world, because the digital world is one that is fundamental to anybody to be able to access nowadays, because we're in an era that everything is moving online. To transact with your bank, you need to go online. AI is the cradle of the world now. To be able to familiarize yourself with this tool and to even create new tools, you need AI technology. And I think we don't want a situation in which our youths are left behind because they don't necessarily have digital tools. So what I'm trying to say is that, one, we need to create more institutions that people can go to familiarize themselves with digital skills. And we need to make it generally accessible by having hybrid models. Like I gave the example of the UK and the Raspberry Pi, in which it encourages people of all ages and all backgrounds, because not everybody necessarily has the accessibility to go to some of those facilities that the government is looking to set up to promote digital literacy. Thank you.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, more and more these days, mostly everything is done online, and the world is becoming more and more digital in the way it operates. So what digital initiatives, or rather, what are the most critical digital skills that the youth need to thrive in the 21st century? Particularly Nigerian youth.
Yes, I would say from my experience, I think something even as fundamental as Microsoft Office Suite is something that everybody needs to be familiar with. And I think that's something that from engaging a lot of youth, they might know of it, but they're not necessarily confident and robust enough to use it to actually be very professional. So I would say we need to start from something as basic as that. And if we're looking to push the boundaries, I would say we need to familiarize ourselves with AI of things, because as I said, AI is a very radical tool that has the potential to change the way that we see the world. And it gives us the opportunity to leapfrog some of these challenges that we're having. Because imagine someone in the village understands that there's a challenge with understanding the seasonality. And then he creates an AI tool that is able to inform the local farmers of the upcoming rains and can advise them based on the inputs that they want to utilize on their farm. On how to better be productive with their farms. So some of these things, it's the mere fact that you understand the tool that you then contextualize it to your local problems to solve local problems. So I think at the very cutting edge of things, youth need to be very familiar with AI tools. And so the large language models like ChatGPT, and then at the very fundamental level, I think they need to have something as basic as Office Suite experience.
Thank you, Saad. And if I can come back to you, Comfort, and continuing on the issue of challenges and solutions, what are the main barriers to youth digital empowerment, and how can they be addressed? And if you have any success stories of youth-led digital initiatives that you're aware of, please let us have that knowledge and how they have contributed to sustainable development. So again, the main barriers to youth digital empowerment, and any success stories of youth-led digital initiatives that have contributed to sustainable development.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to say something. Can I quickly speak to, and then build up on it, to the issue of how educational institutions can better integrate digital skills into their curriculum?
Please go ahead.
If you don't mind. Yeah. So I would like to start by saying that the way the Nigerian education system is today, apart from private institutions in Nigeria, the public institutions, federal polytechnic or federal universities, in Nigeria, most of our lecturers are not even digitally literate. So the question then is, how would such institution build the skills of young people and prepare them for and prepare them to be able to compete globally among their peers when the tutors themselves are not digitally literate? I think we should start from there, because if within that space we do not have lecturers and then students who are digitally literate, the problem now would then progress into the larger society, even post graduate or undergraduate studies, because now our youth in Nigeria are competing with other youths across the globe. So it's not even the matter of before we look at the constraint within the country itself, because the current state of the country, most of our young people are leaving the countries. And as it stands now, if they are not digitally literate, if they don't have that skills, there is no way they'll be able to stand a chance to compete with their peers. And then a lot of them are also getting jobs online to be able to work. They are getting jobs online to work for other companies overseas, not just for companies within the country. So within all of these opportunities that lies within the in the digital space, our young people are faced with challenges such as access to digital skills. They don't have, okay, I'm aware that NIDA facilitated a lot of programs within the digital space recently and even in the past, during previous administration and even the current administration, through NIDA, they've been able to facilitate some digital literacy programs where young people have graduated. But the question then is, within the confines that they find themselves, do they have access to infrastructure that will enable them to be able to work effectively to meet the need of their workplace digitally? They don't have access to digital infrastructure. And by digital infrastructure, I mean access to internet and even the digital tools. So because one thing is to train these people and equip them with these skills, because a lot of times this training happens, they bring them into a particular place. Say, if you're living in Lagos, for instance, or Abuja, they bring them from the remote to the metropolis. They undergo this training. By the time they are done with the training, they go back home. If they don't have access to the computers, if they don't have access to internet, internet data is very expensive right now. If they can't afford it, how would they put those skills and knowledge to use? And how are they able to serve the need in the workplace, both remotely and in person, where they find themselves? And who is going to employ them if they're also beyond these interventions of, you know, training them, providing digital literacy to them? They need internship opportunities so that they are able to put those skills into practice. So if they do not have such opportunities, especially young people in rural communities, if they don't have businesses or organizations within these communities that are able to employ them and have them experiment these skills that they have learned, they would not be able to, you know, get value from the training that they may have participated in. What's the other question again, please?
And it was, if you have any success stories of youth-led digital initiatives. But before we go into that, I just wanted to bring up a point that you made about, first of all, the lack of digital skills among educators, and I think you also mentioned a digital skills program that was established by, I think, was it a government agency? Do you think that? Yeah. So do you think that all these digital skills programs and initiatives, are they too fragmented? Are they part of a digital skills and literacy policy that is incorporating everything that is needed right from early childhood all the way to the work environment, taking into consideration what the market needs? Or is it just a very fragmented approach that we are currently taking to trying to improve our digital literacy amongst our youth?
Honestly, as it stands now, I would say it's fragmented. It's fragmented in the sense that, so I am not aware that NIDA is carrying out that needs assessment holistically, even though there's a national digital strategy policy in place and all of that. There are different aspects of that particular document, right? But now it feels, what I see happening currently is that NIDA is picking, let's say we have an alphabet, NIDA is picking A, C, E, F. It's not, NIDA is not going about this from A to B to C to D to E and F, you know, in that order. So because it is fragmented, you realize that there are still gaps. And if these gaps are not bridged, we would not be able to achieve that level of digital literacy that is required for a system to work. And it's a systemic problem. So if one part of the system is not working, it will affect the entire ecosystem. It will become dysfunctional. You realize that it's almost becoming a case of maybe, like, say, taking using a basket to fetch water, because there are loopholes in the basket. Except those loopholes are sealed up, we would not be able to make significant progress in attaining digital literacy holistically.
And in your opinion, do you believe this is something that can be overcome by revising our current curriculum, or does it need something more robust, like a policy to backstop it?
We already have that in place. We have the framework. It's implementation that there's weakness. Like, the weakness is around implementation. Nigeria has, in terms of policy, digital literacy, or even academic literacy in itself, educational, we have all the policies in place. We have the framework. The problem now is implementation. We don't need new policies, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have everything we need, and we just need to implement it properly.
Implement properly and make sure, it's following that building block. We're not leaving A to jump to Q and then go to come back to D, you know. We already have the framework, we have the policy, we have implementation framework. So if we follow it as it is on the document, we'll be able to achieve or attain that level of digital literacy. The aims and objectives are clear. The strategy is very clear. It's just to ensure that implementation happens, and then provide a monitoring and evaluation framework within every state or local government to ensure that everyone is able, let the system be transparent and ensure that there's inclusivity, in the sense that this literacy is not happening only within the urban communities. It is also happening within rural communities as well. Otherwise, there's going to be exclusion. And then rural urban migration begins to happen, and then you realize that the urban communities become saturated, and of course, crime becomes the order of the day among the youth.
A very good point made, and also to the point where this digital literacy cannot just be in urban areas, but has to be disseminated into the rural areas, which in itself comes with its own challenges of access, financial access, access to power, and access to these technologies. If I can come back to you, Saad, discussing the Sustainable Development Goals of 2030, what do you see as the future role of digital technology in achieving these SDGs?
Whew, that's a very heavy question. I think, as Comfort rightfully said, we have a very beautiful roadmap. The question is, when and how would we start following it, because fundamentally it's a very big problem, and I think it's a problem that we need to address, as Comfort already said, from the bottom up, in ensuring that there's more access from the local government level all the way to the federal government level. We need more empowerment, and I think fundamentally the SDGs, in the way that the UN have defined it, is provided for a lot of transparency with the way that they have been defined and some of the indicators to monitor it. And I think it's something that once the youth have access to digital information, it allows them to better understand some of these problems, because sometimes you might be living with these problems, but because of the fact that you've not necessarily interrogated it, you wouldn't necessarily know that that is what the problem is. And because of the fact that a lot of these SDG goals require robust monitoring, you need a lot of digital tools to better monitor them. So an example of an outreach program I did a couple of years back was just to review the state of water and sanitation in primary and secondary institutions. And for that, we employed a very basic surveying tool to try and capture information. And we realized that, for example, when you go to the schools, there's no digital records, and a lot of those records of students' absentees is misplaced. Or it's on paper and it's very hard to digitalize. So it makes it very difficult for you to sort of capture what the problem is at its basis sense, because of the fact that it's been lost over time because it was not digitized. Because by the time information is digitized, it gets stored forever, for lack of a better word. So I think fundamentally, if we're able to encourage more people access to digital tools, it will allow them understand, for example, the SDG goals, and they can start to frame together different solutions that they want to try and solve for. And by them also being aware of the problems, they can better see how they can empower themselves to utilize some of these digital tools to solve them. And another very good example of how digital tools aided to social discourse, for example, is with the NTAS protests. So it was a movement that started off on the virtual space that moved into the real world, and it just shows you the power that we can have as youth if we're able to understand how to use digital tools, and the power that these digital tools gives us to assemble ourselves and to challenge the status quo. Because there's a lot of things that fundamentally is wrong with the way that our society currently works, but because of the fact that we don't necessarily know them, we're unable to challenge them. Another very good example is budget. Budget, for example, makes it available for anyone to go and see the implementation of federal government and state government budget implementation. And it's something that is very, very, it promotes transparency in the way that government is administered, and something that I would struggle to see how it would have been done otherwise without some of these digital tools. So what I'm trying to say is that to solve a lot of the SDG problems, either when it comes to government accountability, or with the example I gave with water and sanitation, there's a lot of digital tools and digital enablers that allow us to solve those problems. And if we have more youth that are being marginalized by the fact that they don't have access to digital literacy, we would be doing ourselves a disservice to solving those problems that we have, and problems that if we don't start working towards solving them very urgently, we might miss the SDG goals.
And speaking from your experience working in the power sector, can you talk to the role of digital technology in possibly achieving sustainable access to energy for all?
Absolutely. A key example is with the rural electrification. Before the World Bank program was commenced, you had a situation in which government gives out grants to individuals to build energy access solutions, and there wasn't any concrete means of recording the status of those assets. So you have a situation in which somebody does a project in Asaba and he takes a picture and sends it to REA. And even though that's quote unquote digital, REA will assume that, okay, the project has been done, but they don't know that it was not done in the right location. And you have some sort of situation that they actually do the project in the right location, and then 2 days later, they take away those assets and take it somewhere else, or even go and resell it. But with the new World Bank program, they ensured that households got smart meters, and those smart meters are plugged into a central server. So in a way that if for any moment the recipient of that power was to stop receiving power, it will raise a flag, and then they will be able to go and check on that particular site to make sure that it's up and running. So it essentially promotes accountability for government money that was used to provide access to energy for the rural poor. Something that in the past, with the example I gave, there was a lot of room for mismanagement and corruption. But with the implementation of those smart meters, it gave the government the ability to monitor the investment that they had made and make sure that those investments are yielding the returns that they expect to see.
Thank you very much for that. It's been a very fruitful discussion. I think a lot of important and interesting issues were brought up and discussed. We've heard that the rise of technology solutions in many sectors have helped transform societies all over the world. And it's something that we in Nigeria can, if properly frameworked and implemented, can help to produce impactful transformation in our economy. Opportunities in the digital space are boundless in many various and diverse sectors and markets. And if access to technology is properly provided, it has a way of democratizing access among citizens. But again, the issue of a digital divide is very much at the forefront of the digital revolution, especially in developing countries such as Nigeria, where you have issues ranging from gender equality and but also financial affordability, access to power that would enable these digital tools, but also divide amongst generations, where young people have a more have grown up in a digital world and have easier understanding and access to digital spaces compared to older generations who were brought up in a more analog world and find it harder to adapt to a digital way of life. But again, if these tools are properly implemented and accessed, they can have positive impact in overcoming these challenges of equality. Digital tools have the ability to improve access for women to various sectors such as education and jobs, can help them to gather communities from which they can learn and share expertise and remove barriers where possible. But again, all these has to be properly frameworked, properly designed. So every sector of the Nigerian society, both the mainstream and marginalized, are properly taking into account when designing policies around digital literacy and access to digital tools. And Nigeria has these policies and these frameworks already designed, and it's just a matter of having the will to implement it, but the political will and the capacity to implement these policies and these frameworks in such a way that starting right from early years, children are incorporating digital learning into their education. So by the time they're ready for the job market, they have all the skills required to power the market of the future. Thank you so much to our panelists, Nasir, Comfort and Saad, for joining us today. We hope that this discussion continues. We hope to continue to engage the youth, the policymakers, and all the other stakeholders in driving digital revolution within Nigeria in the most sustainable and practical method to power our economy for now and for the future. Thank you, panelists, and thank you to our audience who have been listening to us for the past 50 or so minutes. We hope you continue to contribute to the conversation. And as I said, I'm the facilitator for the Community of Practice and Youth at the NESG, and all youths are welcome to join, where these conversations can continue to be elaborated on and solutions be offered. You can find out more information about us at the NESG website, www.nesgroup.org. Thank you again, panelists.
Thank you for having me.
Have a good day. Having me.
Thank you, and I hope you have a wonderful day. Goodbye.
You too. Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Have a wonderful day.